Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and Rational Radio 1360 AM in beautiful Dallas, Texas. Of course, I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You know our last president, George Bush, lives in Dallas, Texas, and I'm sure he and Laura look forward to listening to me every Sunday from 3 to 4, Rational Radio 1360 AM in Dallas, Texas. Of course, we have a dynamite show today, and it all revolves around justice. We will be talking about a new investigation into 9/11 and the continuing saga of the San Francisco 8. Stay tuned. We'll be right back here on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox with our first guest, and I'm Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehanSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehanSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. My first guest today is New Yorker Manny Badillo, whose uncle was killed in the attacks on 9/11. Manny is the director of NYCCAN, and he will tell us about this interesting initiative that is currently fighting for ballot access in the state of New York as we speak. Manny, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. It's great to have you on.
Cindy, thank you so much for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, I wanted to have you on because you're working on a very important initiative there in the state of New York, something that really affects the entire nation for sure. But I've had a loved one murdered from the consequences of U.S. foreign policy, and not only did your uncle die on 9/11, but my son was killed in Iraq, and now millions have been wounded, killed, displaced, or otherwise harmed since 9/11, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, or the torture prisons and rendition sites all over the world. You know, 9/11 was, I believe, basically their rationale for doing this. But before we get into the initiative that you are working for in the state of New York, tell us a little bit about your uncle.
My uncle, Thomas Joseph Sproy, he was the rock and the mentor of our family. The man was just joy, and he was someone who the entire family looked up to. He was the most successful one, and he worked for Marsh McLuhan as vice president of internet technology. He had offices in Midtown Manhattan as well as the World Trade Center, and he did travel often throughout the month to different cities. On the morning of September 11th, he was just as tenacious as he always was. He was in the office early, and unfortunately, he was in the buildings when the planes hit. A coworker had him going down to the mall that was underneath the World Trade Center to get some coffee a couple of minutes before the plane hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this, Cindy, the worst day wasn't the 11th. The worst days were the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, when hope began to fade.
Right.
And we didn't hear from him. Now, we did recover his body 2 months later. He was recovered along with 36 other bodies over the course of 4 days. And we did have a proper burial. But I have to say that I think about my uncle every single day. My family thinks of him. We visit the grave site. But if anything, by speaking his name, invoking his name, and letting people know that, yes, he was one of the first murdered in this supposed war on terror, and that his death relates to your son's death, as well as the thousands that have died in these wars of aggression, as well as the millions that have died from U.S. foreign policy, I have to say that I do empathize tremendously with those families in Iraq and Afghanistan who are losing their family members, innocents, to essentially what amounts to terrorism.
Right.
And
well,
that
unfortunately, not only Iraq and Afghanistan, but now our foreign policy cancer is spreading into Pakistan, and hundreds are being killed. Millions are being put into refugee camps, the fleeing, the immoral drone bombings. And before we get into the initiative, Manny, what I don't understand, what's the difference of flying planes into buildings? What's the difference, morally speaking, flying planes into buildings or dropping bombs from unmanned drones onto innocent populations?
Cindy, you've nailed it right there. There is no difference, okay? What we are finding, those that were intimately affected, is that whoever loses a loved one to this violence is going to look and want to find out more, want to get to the justice, want to get to the accountability. But there is no difference, Cindy. These are wars that are taking place today. These are wars of empire. These are deaths. These are crimes. This should not be happening this day and age. Close to just over 4 years ago, you and a few dozen people began to do a protest in Texas. And that inspired and invigorated a certain population here in this country, and it still does. To be able to say no more deaths, no more wars, based on a foreign policy that's shaky at best, but I have to say that when it comes to my uncle, there's still an unsolved crime. There's a mass murder. 70% of our questions were never answered during the only public inquiry, which Vietnam veteran Max Cleland, one of the former commissioners, he quit midway through that commission, saying it was a national scandal. Now, I'm going to listen to Max Cleland, who fought in a war, knows the depth and the depravity of it. He, was injured from that war. And for him to say that and then to understand that so many of our questions weren't answered, there's still no justice, and there's still no accountability. And ultimately, it takes people like yourself, Cindy, myself, and others who speak out and speak to the public about what's happening. And and I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing. You've inspired me and countless others
to speak out publicly. Well, thank you, Manny, and thanks for bringing up almost 4 years ago today, because today is exactly the four-year anniversary of when we did march down Prairie Chapel Road demanding some kind of answer to what noble cause our loved ones were dead for. And you so rightly put it that your uncle's death and Casey's death are very, very intimately connected. Now, to me, it's a surprise they put Max Cleland on the commission because he is a man of integrity. And so I'm not surprised that he did resign in disgust over the absurdity of it. But your whole initiative and what you're striving for in New York City, and which I support and many other people support, also prominent people support, an initiative for a new investigation into 9/11. Tell my listeners about that.
Okay. NYC CAN, New York City Coalition for Accountability Now, is an organization. We've been participating in our democratic process every day for over a year now. We have been collecting signatures from New York City voters. We approach them. We have one-on-one dialogue with voters in New York City, and we ask them to sign the petition in order for a referendum to be put on this November's ballot for giving New York City voters the ability to say yes to a new subpoena-powered investigation, privately funded, so that we can have all answers to the myriad of questions that remain unanswered. It has been extremely successful. Over 75,000 residents of New York City who are voters have signed on to this petition. And right now, we are fighting a legal battle in the courts to ensure that this petition gets to the November ballot.
Man,
by
is
default,
it a, is, excuse me, is it a New York City initiative, or is it a statewide initiative?
This is a strictly New York City initiative under Home Rule Law 37. And what it does is it allows for those most intimately affected, the residents of New York City who are voters, to express to really participate in democracy by going to the polls and saying, yes, I would like to have a new investigation. So many of us were affected. 9/11 is still happening every day for family members, for first responders, most importantly. These are the heroes that went in to rescue and then recover the bodies of my uncle and close to 3,000 others. They are sick and dying today. Hundreds have already died based on the lies our government told us. It is vitally important that we have all questions answered so we know exactly how to treat these heroes, so we know exactly what happened to our loved ones, and most especially so our nation could come to some sort of closure, because I am very upset that my uncle's name is being used to murder millions more throughout the world for the past close to 8 years.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I admire that in many 9/11 families who were adamantly opposed to the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan based on what happened on 9/11. So I was involved in I was involved in the electoral process myself last year when I ran against House Speaker Nancy Pelosi in San Francisco. So I know how grueling the process is, because we also had to collect a lot of signatures to get my name on the ballot, not as many as you did, but you collected 75,000 signatures. How many valid signatures do you need for ballot access?
Well, the process went as such. We handed in 52,000 signatures to the city clerk's office about a month and a half ago. We only needed 30,000 to be valid in order for the referendum to be brought in front of the New York City Council, which is a group of 51 people, politicians here in New York City.
Right.
The city clerk responded by saying that only 26,000 out of the 52,000 were valid, which is half,
right,
which is obscene,
right,
because we know that many, many, many more were valid, if not close to all of them. So right now we're involved in a legal battle with the city of New York to validate at least another 4,000 signatures in order to cross that 30,000 signature threshold for the referendum to be put in front of city council. It is vitally important that we retain lawyers and that we ask for volunteers to help us recount the petitions. And that's one thing that I would ask for, is that if people go to nyccan.org, if you can donate even $10, $15, $20 towards this process, this is a historical referendum. We are setting a precedent for so many different places and so many different nations that were affected by 9/11. To invigorate the population, for others to understand the process. Listen, when 75,000 people speak, that is unbelievable in this day and age. And especially in the city of New York, so intimately affected, the voice of the people needs to be heard. And we are participating through democratic actions and trying to ensure that New York City voters have that option to say yes to a new subpoena-powered investigation to get to the justice.
Did you verify the signatures yourselves when you were turning them in?
I validated all my own signatures. I collected thousands myself.
Right.
There were a number of people that did validate signatures. We're all, we all knew the rules. We all knew exactly how the petition, how the signatories needed to fill out the petition. They had to print it as legibly as possible so they could be verified very easily. We had to ensure that they were New York City voters. We did all that. Of course, this is we're dealing with a bureaucracy. We're dealing with the city of New York, this entrenched political establishment that really doesn't want to see justice for those loved ones, and for those tens of thousands of first responders. So we knew that they were going to come back and say, oh, there's not enough signatures, or they're going to pick out points on the petition that they say, is not lawful. That's what we're dealing with right now. That's why it's so important that we continue this fight, because this is a precedent that we're setting in New York City, close to 8 years later, after a mass murder, an unsolved crime. And I think you mentioned that in your book, Myth America. I think one of the last myths that you speak of is how the U.S. government, through the establishment corporate media, has managed to classically condition the American population into thinking that it was just 19 alleged hijackers and a guy in a cave in Afghanistan that managed to pull off the mass murder that took place.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And not only classically condition us to, that lie, but also to the fact that if you question the official story of the U.S. government, you're a conspiracy theorist. Now, when I put out my statement in support of your initiative, I got mostly people telling me thank you for supporting it. But some people called me a crazy conspiracy theorist, and I want you to talk about that. But then many people that are establishment Democrats also question me, saying that we need to move forward, that we can't look, back, that, in order to heal, we need to look forward. So first, talk about this whole conspiracy, this crazy conspiracy theorist paradigm we have in this country, if we ever question any official story.
Well, I hear that often myself. Every Saturday with wearechange.org, we're down at Ground Zero engaging the public, handing them information. Every Saturday, there's always one or two people that say, oh, you're crazy conspiracy theorists. And I very simply reply that I'm not a conspiracy theorist, okay? I am a victim's family member that wants answers to the questions that I have. And to find answers to those questions, you need to be able to question your government. You need to be able to petition for a redress of grievances. There's no conspiracy in that, okay? Conspiracy theory is a term that's been used in the pejorative for quite a long time. But I have to say, the craziest conspiracy that I heard is that 19 hijackers with nothing but box cutters managed to penetrate, hijack four aircraft and hit one of the most heavily protected buildings on the planet
right.
with nothing but skill and wit.
Right.
You know, there's conspiracy theories that are out there. This issue of 9/11 comes down to the American public not being knowledgeable about the details of the case. When a plane crashes in the middle of the Atlantic, we go to all the details. We hear about it for days and days after, and every detail, every single time a plane part is picked up, it's talked about. How come on 9/11 none of those planes were put back together? How come on 9/11 that crime scene began to be cleaned up the next day? We all watch CSI. We all have an idea of how, you know, forensics take place. How come there are tens of thousands of first responders that are dying of lung ailments because three towers, actually, turned to dust?
Right.
There was no collapse. Those towers turned to dust. That dust went in the lungs of the heroes that went into rescue and recover. And there's this myth that, you know, all we think about when we think of 9/11 is two planes hitting buildings. Nobody even knows about the third building that was demolished that day, a 47-story tall building, the Solomon Brothers building, that at 5:30 in the afternoon was demolished directly into its own footprint symmetrically. And that's something that if we're made more aware of the facts of the case, the American public will then be able to critically think about the event and demand answers to the myriad of questions that all family members, first responders, and survivors have right now.
Well, let's talk about one of the, before we go on to this whole, you know, paradigm that's on the so-called left right now about moving forward and not holding the Bush administration accountable for anything. Let's talk about one of the newest revelations that has come out, and that's that nanothermite was found in, the rubble of the World Trade Center. What implications does that have to you? What does that say to you?
Well, it says a lot. Because, number one, publication, that's a peer-reviewed and refereed scientific study that found highly engineered, highly explosive nanothermite in the debris of the World Trade Center. This corroborates exactly what the hundreds of firefighters, first responders, and survivors of that day said, okay? That corroborates the video evidence that we have. That corroborates a lot of things. That should be front page news. That's science. I've always felt, Cindy, that the science will solve the case of my uncle's murder.
And is nanothermite? Tell my listeners, I'm sure most of my listeners know, but tell my listeners what nanothermite is.
Nanothermite is a highly engineered military-grade explosive.
Bingo.
That's used by our demolition teams, our SEAL teams, our Delta Force throughout the world to take down huge structures, steel structures, because it cuts through steel like butter. This nanothermite was found in the debris of the World Trade Center from samples taken on that day and after. Now, this same nanothermite could also be a cause for the range of different lung ailments and sicknesses that these first responders are going through. And this is what we have to find out. We have to find out what really happened. A scientific study that shows explosives at the World Trade Center should be front page news. Instead, our establishment corporate media still has not reported on it, you know, from both sides. To me, there is a false paradigm of left and right. There is
right.
no Democrat or Republican
right.
party. There's one party, the elites. And you actually speak about that in your book, about
the robber class
and the robbed class.
Right. Well, what is there any logical reason for nanothermite to have been found in the debris?
Oh, that's an excellent question. There is, from all the research that everyone's done, there is absolutely no reason for highly engineered military-grade explosives to be anywhere near the World Trade Center. That was an office tower that housed tens of thousands of civilians. There'd be no way that the city would ever allow military-grade explosives to be down there. For the fact that it was found, it just shows that there is so much more to this story than what our government told us. And it is our constitutional obligation as American citizens to get to the answers of such an event, which has caused tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of deaths over the past 8 years.
Well, absolutely. And so let's talk about this whole, a valid investigation would hopefully uncover some kind of chain of evidence there has to be some kind of way to trace such a volatile, damaging military-grade explosive. There has to be some way to trace that.
Oh, absolutely. And if the investigation is done properly with subpoena power, you protect those that speak out. This is another thing. You know, a lot of people at Ground Zero, when I speak to them, you know, sometimes they say, oh, you know, you're just against the Bush administration. This is completely non-political, okay? This has everything to do with solving the crime of a mass murder.
Uh-huh.
The reason why the commission failed was a myriad of reasons, but one of the main ones was that it was politicized. Here we have an opportunity to follow that chain of evidence in a proper investigation that's impartial, that has subpoena power, that puts people under oath, and has them answer questions. There has already been a worldwide public investigation for the past 8 years. People from all walks of life, all professions, have looked into the events. Many have been courageous enough to risk their careers to come out and speak out about how the official story of 9/11 does not make any sense compared to the wealth of physical, corroborated, empirical, substantiated evidence that any one of us can find. It's very important that we continue to speak about this. And I always say, talk to friends, talk to family. You know, I've lost some friends because they're not willing to look at what is already there. But I've gained so many more friends and so many people that I've met real-life heroes, Cindy. I've met people like Cynthia McKinney and John Schroeder and Willie Rodriguez and yourself. And that's only coming because I've been able to break out of that conditioning, to have an open mind, to look at the evidence, to look at the facts of the case objectively. And here we are, close to 8 years later, in New York City, and we're petitioning the government for a redress of grievances.
Well, I certainly want to encourage my listeners to go to nyccan.org and contribute whatever you can to help you continue your very important work. But let's talk about now this whole issue of, you know, we don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to look backwards because it could be a distraction from what, you know, we need to accomplish these days. We can't heal if we're constantly bringing up the past. What's your response to that?
You know, I tell people, it's not a matter of looking back. It's a matter of accepting where we are now. And where we are now is that 9/11 and the repercussions of it are happening every single day. Every week, we are losing hero first responders to that event. These are people that are leaving this life prematurely based on the lies they were told. Every day, family members grieve and still have zero closure into what happened. 9/11 is a current event. And from what I've seen from our current administration, I've seen the same old, tired story that I saw from the last administration. It's not a matter of moving on. It's a matter of accepting where we are now and taking the proper actions to get to the justice and to get to the accountability. I mean, it's amazing. You don't say to a first responder, a survivor who's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, to move on. You have to approach the situation as it stands. And right now we have an unsolved crime that is affecting lives throughout the world. We can stand right now with each other in order to ensure that this doesn't happen again. I don't want anyone to lose a family member based on lies. And ultimately, so many of us have. And it's up to us to be able to bring that to the public, and it's up to the public to then pass that along. Knowledge is power. And I really feel that we empower ourselves when we open our mind, take a look at the evidence, and take actions to right the wrongs that have been done to us.
Well, you know, first of all, my response to those people, because, of course, I struggle mightily for accountability, not just because I want justice for my son's death and for your uncle's death and the millions of others, but because I don't want it to happen in the future. And nine of our troops and dozens of people in Afghanistan have been killed in the past 2 days. So like you said, it's still happening. There can't be any healing when the wounds are still being exposed on a constant basis. But the second thing I say is inherently, crimes happen in the past. You know, we can't use the defense of that happened in the past. Let's move forward. You know, haven't you heard if we get pulled over for speeding or running a stop sign, we can't tell the cop, you know, haven't you heard, we're moving forward now. I ran that stop sign in the past. We have to investigate it. There can't be any healing without accountability. And this country is so blind to the fact that on 9/11, we were all hurt, not just the 3,000 people who died, not just their families, but this entire country was hurt because it was, you know, an attack on us, but where did the attack come from? So most of the people who tell me you have to move forward are ones who haven't suffered as personally as we have.
That's right. You know, Cindy, you're exactly right. I mean, if more people could hear that message, if we could hear that message every day, that's vitally important into correcting the wrongs that have been done to us, to the rest of the world. I want to say that I am more than humbled by the range of people from all over this country, all over the world, that empathize with us and that take actions and stand with us. And I am more than honored to know you, to have met you, to have spoken with you, and to be on your show today to inform your listenership about what's taking place in New York. I'll ask if you could please donate. That would help us out tremendously. This is historical. This is a precedent we're setting for people throughout the world to engage their government, to participate in democracy, and to let the people in power know that, in all honesty, we the people hold the power. We need our voices to be heard, and we could do that in many different ways. And right here, what we're doing right now is one of the ways for it to happen.
Well, Manny, you know, you did say that the people in New York were most affected, but I think that this entire country has been affected by the events on 9/11. You know, not only have we lost loved ones and valuable family members, but we've lost a lot of our liberties. We have the USA Patriot Act. We have the Military Commissions Act. We have, you know, so many things, torture. Our country has institutionalized torture. So it's something that we all have to support. So I encourage my listeners to go to your website, donate whatever they can, and please give my listeners your website again, Manny.
That is nyccan.org. On the left-hand side, there is a button, a graphic item that you could click. It says donate, donate whatever you can. Cindy, you've been doing this because of Casey. I'm doing this because of my uncle, Thomas Joseph Scroy. I'm doing this because there are so many other family members out there whose voices aren't heard. There are superheroes in this world that do so much. They're examples for us. And what we could do right now is we can speak, we can stand together, we can take actions that we are allowed in this democracy we live in, and it's so vitally important that we continue to do so. I want to thank you so much, Cindy.
Well, Manny, I certainly want to thank you for all the hard work you and your colleagues are putting in for all of us there in New York City, and I hope you can come back soon with some good news for us to report that your initiative made it on the ballot. So thanks for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox today, Manny.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. That was Manny Badillo from NYC Cannes. This is Cindy Sheehan. When we come back from the short break, we'll be talking to Cisco Torres, one of the members of the San Francisco 8. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet. Those who send their children off to die in robber class wars. Those who lack proper health care. Those who are denied decent education. And those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. This is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or Rational Radio 1360 AM in Dallas, Texas. My next guest is Cisco Torres. He's the last of the San Francisco 8 who's still being persecuted by the U.S. government. Cisco, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Well, thank you, Cindy. Thank you for having me on.
As I explained to my listeners in the introduction, you're one of the members of the San Francisco 8 who's been persecuted for decades by the U.S. government, and the charges were dropped against five of the brothers, but you still have charges pending, don't you?
Yes.
And this is for, you were accused of...
Of attempted murder of a police sergeant.
Right.
The murder of a police sergeant, and also a conspiracy.
And we know that because I had Richard Brown on my show, and he explained the case. We talked about how the charges were brought because of a confession that was gleaned from torture, which is, of course, illegal. And so the charges were dropped against five of the brothers. Were they dropped for not enough evidence, or were they dropped because of the torture issue?
Well, it's both. Of course, when they dropped the charges on the brothers recently, you know, because of lack of evidence, and the torture aspect of it came in when one of the brothers, Harold Taylor,
along with Ray Boudreaux, another brother who's since passed away, John Bowman, had a case in L.A. years ago. And the judge threw out that case because of the torture that was involved. You see, and back in, I believe, in 1971, Harold Taylor, Reuben Scott, and John Bowman were arrested by New Orleans Police Department there and tortured. That is to say, they were waterboarded. Electrodes were put on them. They were
right.
Feces were thrown on them. Mm-hmm. They were held naked in their cells, and they were tortured for over a period of 3 days.
And to get them to confess to the murder of the police sergeant in San Francisco, and from what Richard...
No, they didn't confess to the murder of the police sergeant in San Francisco. What they did was that they provided the police with some evidence that could be used against them, which was actually a confession that was read by the local police department there. Understand that they were put in individual cells at the time when they were tortured.
Right.
So the so-called confessions were actually something that was read to them. That after 3 days of torture, the men were ranged in ages from 18 to 21 and 22.
And we'll have to remind my listeners that they were members of the Black Panther Party. And
yes.
It seemed that the persecution existed to clear up some unsolved cases from many cities, not just San Francisco.
Yes, that's true. This case was supposed to be... Let me backtrack a bit. See, one of the people who was used and later... who was later used in court for a trial was Reuben Scott, who was the one who really turned. He was the one who was the youngest of the three.
Mm-hmm.
He was so traumatized that he was isolated, and he appeared in court for a trial in New York against Jalil Muntakim and Herman Bell, my other two co-defendants. And from what I understand, they plan to use him here. Now, after he was tortured, later on he retracted those statements. He's been going on and retracting those statements, and he said that the confessions that he gave were as a result of torture. Now, when this case, when they brought it back up again, this case was funded by Homeland Security.
Right, right.
So understand that they brought Reuben Scott wherever he was, you know, at or living at the time, and he was pressured and told that he had to, you know, give up evidence again for this trial, that he was going to be used. And he had said, from what I understand at the time, that whatever evidence he gave or confession was taken out of him was due to torture.
So why have the charges not been dropped against you, Cisco?
Well, that's a good question. when I was arrested on a Friday, on a Saturday, John Walsh ran a segment of me in New York saying that after 30-some-odd years, that this fugitive from justice, Francisco Torres, was finally arrested. And yet I've been living under my same name, same Social Security number, and file taxes every year.
Oh, wow.
Also, I don't know if they're trying to justify that. Also, I am currently living in New York, and my other co-defendants, the majority of them are here in California.
Right.
And, of course, Harold Taylor, who was the torture victim, lives in Panama City. So we think that they're trying to form a wedge between us, you know, and perhaps get people to pressure me and have the steam run out of our supporters so that finally everybody gives up. Understand, I was offered also a plea deal, which was to accept 9 months, which was the time served, the 9 months that we did here in the county jail and something like a 3-year probation.
Right.
And so I refused that.
Well, because you're innocent.
Exactly.
Right. Well, and this case has already cost millions of dollars. Millions of dollars that could certainly go towards helping homeless people or go towards education or real security in San Francisco, but it's going towards this bogus case. And like you said, it's basically just for harassment.
Yes, it is, and it's also, as we've always said, it's to send a message out to the youth, you know, of America and people who are, you know, currently talking about the war and resisting the war, and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, that if you resist, that if you protest, this is what can happen to you.
Well,
you know,
it
doesn't matter how long it takes, but you know, we can always come back and pick you up and silence you. Understand that this case, you know, was picked up by under the Bush and Cheney's administration, and it was funded by Homeland Security.
Right, and actually prosecuted by the state attorney general in California.
Right, and you know, they always claim that it's a criminal case, and yet we were picked up by the Federal Task Force on Terrorism.
Wow. So you do have a hearing in San Francisco on Monday, August 10th, and that's at give my listeners who listen in the Bay Area the information for where the courthouse is and about the rally at 8 o'clock. In the morning, so we can come out and support you.
Thank you, and we look forward to seeing everyone there. My co-defendants, the one who could make it up, will be there, also showing their support. So we hope to see as many people there, and we also hope to see you there if you're here in San Francisco, Cindy.
Well, I certainly will be there, and can you tell my listeners where the courthouse is?
Yes, it's down at 850 Bryant Street, the courthouse there, and in San Francisco. So we will, as Cindy said, stated, we will be having a rally at about 8 a.m. In the morning, and then we'll proceed into the courtroom at 9 o'clock.
Well, great. I'll be there, and I hope to see many people there supporting you because, you know, this just, like you said, it's about Homeland Security. It's about the oppressions of this war on terror, and we have to show support for each other, and you know, we can never give up in our quest for justice. So Cisco, thank you for being on the show, and we'll see you on Monday.
Thank you very much there again, Cindy.
Well, thank
Goodbye.
You.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and here's my rant for the day. Today, as we record the show, it's the fourth anniversary of the day that about 75 sweating people marched down Prairie Chapel Road to demand a meeting with then-President George Bush to ask him for what noble cause he killed my son, Casey, and tens of thousands of others. That initial action sparked a prairie fire that reignited an anti-war movement that had been lying dormant since the 2004 elections that the Republicans stole again. Unfortunately, many of the people who were reactivated or activated that summer have fallen into a new coma of hope-gnosis, and the occupations still rage on, and hundreds of thousands more have been killed, displaced, or wounded in the past 4 years. What can we do? We can challenge the dark overlords of the military-industrial complex always, and not fall into radical acceptance of a system when there happens to be a Democrat in power. I know I seem to keep harping on this issue, but July was the worst month ever in Afghanistan, and millions of people have been displaced in Pakistan. Where is the movement? Where is the national disgust? Where is the outcry over this violence when the cable news entertainment shows are running the healthcare town hall meeting disruptions into the ground? 4 troops were killed in Afghanistan yesterday, and 5 more today. And that doesn't even count the dozens of Afghans that have been killed in the same time period. You know, I hate to tell everybody this, but dead for Obama is just as dead as dead for Bush, and there's still no noble cause. Okay, my Ask Cindy question today is a statement from somebody who was formerly pro-war and now is against the wars. It's from Al in Florida. Dear Cindy, on one of your websites, I noticed you had a protest on June 8, 2009. I accused you a few weeks ago of not being active in protesting and wondered what happened since Barack Obama was elected. Sorry, I write this now as someone that has become completely against the Iraq War. Even though I am a Republican and tried to support our then-President Bush, out of loyalty to him and what I felt was his duty at the time, given all the circumstances. But for months now, I have reassessed my feelings given the length of this action. We should have long ago determined it was useless to continue and called it quits. I'm a Korean vet and felt even then we were wrong for various reasons, as I also did about Vietnam. Now we are also wrongly in and escalating the Afghanistan war. Why? The lives lost in Korea were not worth it. Or did it prove anything along with that in Vietnam? You stated in one of your websites, quote, my son died for nothing, end quote. I ask and feel the same, quote, are not other sons and daughters dying now uselessly, end quote. The Democrats for many months criticized Bush with charges of he lied. He wanted to finish what his father started. It was for oil. He should get out immediately. The war is lost, etc. What amazing hypocrites. Where is the outrage to demand now that we get out, let alone our upscale involvement in Afghanistan and even Pakistan? We should get out of there as well. All we are getting from this administration is debates about minor things as to divert us from these wars, like who killed Michael Jackson, the Sotomayor confirmation that has lasted months but should have lasted a few days, health care that concerns a small percentage of the population, the recent fiasco in Massachusetts, about the arrest of the college professor, cash for clunkers, even a big thing now about turning in anyone that disagrees with health care legislation, on and on and on. Meanwhile, men and women are dying, and we don't hear a thing about it. During the Bush administration, the media reported on a daily basis the number of deaths. I doubt it if anyone can give you the number now. But just the other day, it was reported that July was the deadliest month in Afghanistan. They used to give the exact amount. But the other day, it was reported with exact numbers that July rose the highest in the Dow in 22 years, and that the Dow rose to its best month in July since 2002. People are holding tea parties about the spending in this administration and about health care debate. We need tea parties to protest these wars, and now I, for one, say enough is enough and bring the boys and girls home now. Sincerely, Al. Thank you, Al, for that statement. Al and my relationship, our email relationship, started off a little testily when he did call me a hypocrite for not protesting the war. So I'm glad that Al is having some sort of epiphanies, and I wish the people, the Democrats who support Obama, would have these same epiphanies, and we could get down to doing the real work of true change. Well, that's the show for today. I'd like to thank, as always, my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my assistant producer, Mikey, Rational Radio, 1360 AM in Dallas, Texas, and my guests, Manny Badillo and Cisco Torres, and you, the listeners, as always. So I hope you come back next week and listen to our show. We're going to have another great show. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Mr. Speaker, Vice President Cheney, members of Congress, distinguished citizens, and fellow citizens. Every year, by law and by custom, we meet here to threaten the world. The American flag stands for corporate scandals, recession, stock market declines, blackmail, terror, burning with hot irons, dripping acid on the skin, mutilation with electric drills, cutting out tongues, and rape. Our first goal is to show utter contempt for the environment. I have sent you a comprehensive energy plan to devastate communities, kill wildlife, and burn away millions of acres of treasured forests. This government is taking unprecedented measures to protect our people and defend our homeland. And this year, for the first time, we must offer every child in America 3 nuclear missiles. To date, we have arrested or otherwise dealt with 400 billion key commanders of Al-Qaeda, which is enlisting tens of thousands of new volunteers across America. They include a man who directed logistics and funding for the CIA. One of them is found at the Department of Defense. One by one, the terrorists are learning we are building a culture to encourage international terrorism. The United States will ask the UN Security Council to convene on February the 5th to consider the facts of Iraq's ongoing defiance of the world. Secretary of State Powell will plant information to incite fear about Iraq's links to terrorist groups. And tonight I have a message for the people of Iraq. Go home and die. Trusting in the sanity and restraint of the United States is not a strategy, and it is not an option.
I must make my witness. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know. The air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. Chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs right now. Go stick your head out and yell and keep yelling, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.